Perfect timing for Lawn and Garden Radio on a Wednesday morning on 970 WTAY with reports of maybe 60 trees down around the Detroit Lakes area. That's where we're going to start today on Lawn and Garden Radio with Fargo Forum columnist Don Kinsler. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Sandy. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning,
Mike, Don. In the teal. And we have our great 2017 Lawn and Garden Radio sponsors. So let's mention them, if you don't mind. Carmen's Gardens, Greenscape Companies, Inc. Oh, and by the way, Carmen's Gardens is still open today. So if you see them on 13th Avenue, they're still open. Baker Garden and Gift, JT Lawn Service and Landscaping, Huber Enterprises Custom Lawn Service and Snow Removal, Remax Legacy Realty, Ron Bow, Windows Plus, M. Lakerman Construction, Johnson Lawn Service, and Lawn Care Guys. Let's get to work. Our phone numbers are 293-9000 or 888-970-9329, or you can email us anytime at talk@wday.com.
So big storms, as Sandy mentioned, Don, last night. Trees are down all over the place. So things people should be thinking about as they're clearing off these trees, anything to keep in mind as we're sort of preparing and, you know, dealing with the loss. Because for some people, these trees have been there for many, many, many years, and it's a kind of a sad time, but you got to move on and you got to get this stuff cleaned up.
Exactly. And, you know, we're so dry in South Fargo, where we're at, we haven't had rain for probably about a month since it's been like an inch. And so we were hoping for moisture, but when it gets accompanied with such damage, you know, then that's very disappointing. And like you mentioned, it does take a while, take years to grow a tree. So whether it's replacing a tree from storm damage or newer homes that need to plant trees, sometimes it can be a little confusing to know what type of tree to put in.
Yeah, and especially, Don, you know, a lot of people in these homes that have these larger trees that have gone down, they like the shade, they like, you know, what it provides in just aesthetics. And so if I'm dealing with tree damage today and I had a large tree that I want to think about replacing, what is the way for me to go? Obviously, it's not going to be an overnight thing, but what's going to get me to having a large tree again the fastest? What type of tree would I want to go with? Can I get a tree that's a little farther down the line than just a baby tree? What's the way I can look at this?
Now, one of the interesting things with trees is kind of one of the rules of nature is that the faster the tree grows, usually they have a shorter lifespan.
Okay.
For example, the poplar type. Poplar types of trees grow very, very rapidly and can give you a tree quite quickly. But unfortunately, they have a shorter lifespan. On the other side of the spectrum, types like oaks, which generally grow slower, but they last much, much longer. So a person needs to decide whether you want fast growing but shorter lived, or if you're willing to be patient. Now, some trees are kind of have a nice in between. For example, thinking of American linden, also called basswood. That is a very nice large shade tree, has a good rate of growth. So some of those trees kind of fall right in between. So sometimes a person does need to be cautious with looking for something that grows too fast because it may only last 30 years or so. Now, South University Drive in Fargo did an interesting thing when they planted trees. They planted a combination of like slow-growing, long-lived oak trees in combination with shorter lifespan poplars.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure the eventual idea is to remove the poplars, you know, when their lifespan is done, and then you'll have the oaks. But most home yards probably don't have room for that. So now when a person's deciding whether storm damage replacement or a tree for a new yard, when you're looking at a list of trees.
And I just did this with you because I'm in West Fargo. I got a list. I know many of you listening, if you've built in West Fargo, you got the city list from there, and we kind of talked through
Many of our cities have a list. The forestry department has a list of trees from which you can choose. Now, when you're looking at that list, generally the trees can be grouped into three categories. So you can decide what type of tree you want based on that. For example, the first type are the large towering shade trees. You know, think of the big old elms and oaks, you know, that tower over a house and give shade all around. So in that category, of course, you have like the American linden basswood that I mentioned, or oak trees, maple trees mm-hmm. grow big and large. So that would be the first category. Or if you decide that you don't want something that big, the second category are the medium-sized trees. They'll give some shade, but they don't tower over the house. In that category are the things like birch, the ornamental crab apples, quaking aspen, mountain ash, and things such as that.
Mm-hmm.
Then the last final third category are small decorative trees. They look nice, but they're more little screening trees, such as Amur maple, which is more of a shrubby, half-shrub, half-tree type maple, and the Japanese tree lilac. Those don't really give shade, but they can give some screen. So the first thing to do when looking at tree lists is to decide what type of and height of shade tree or tree that you want.
All right, Don Kinsler is in. It's Lawn and Garden Radio. Your questions, 293-9000, toll-free, 888-970-9329. You can email or text in to talk at WDAY.com. I know with cooler weather here the next couple of days, people might want to get out and do some gardening or do some things with their lawn, or if you're having tree issues, any of those questions that you've been thinking about for a while, you haven't addressed, and you want to ask Don, now is the time to do it. We'll get to your calls right after the break, and emails and texts again. Talk at WDAY.com or 293-9000. It's Lawn and Garden Radio with Don Kinsler. We'll be right back. 970 WDAY.
Time 11:22, Lawn and Garden Radio Day. And Don Kinsler is here taking your calls and questions. Email us anytime at talk at WDAY.com. And let's go to work. Jim is on the line. He has a question about vegetable gardens. Good morning, Jim. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hi, Jim.
Well,
great, thanks.
Hi, Don. How are you?
Good.
So I've got, it should be obvious to me, but I can't seem to figure it out. I've got on my green beans and my squash, this brownish, tannish brown, I call it a blight, but I don't think it is a blight. Spots, and they're probably about the size of between a quarter and a half dollar. They're on several of the leaves, not all of them. For the most part, the plants are healthy. The squashes are starting to produce their squash. The bean plants are starting to produce some beans. And the weird thing is that it's happening in all of my, I've got four different gardens, Don, as you know, and they're happening in all the gardens. It's not isolated to one particular spot. So I'm wondering what this is. Could it be an acid problem in the ground, a pH problem, too much, too little iron. I don't know what it is, go ahead.
Sure. Whereabouts are the spots occurring? Are they on the center of the leaf or on the edges, the margins of the leaf?
Yep, that's a great question. On the squash, they are on the center of the leaf. On the beans, they seem to be migrating towards the edges.
Towards the edges. The good news is there really are not any disease-type things that cross lines such as that. For example, there are bean blights, but they don't go to squash and other things. So a widespread disease isn't the case. It's probably just a weather climate-type thing with some of the up and down heat and wind and things like that that we've got. Exactly the pattern that it's causing, oftentimes it will be on the margins of the leaves that are affected. But sometimes with the large leaves like the squash, sometimes I suppose the interior. But the good news is there really isn't anything you need to do. Of course, we all would like our vegetable gardens, the leaves to be picture perfect, but because that always looks so nice. During weather like we've had this year, it's almost impossible to keep the leaves picture perfect. We're seeing that a lot on shrubs and trees and things. And so most of it is weather related. Even though you keep it well watered, the leaves can still suffer a bit. So good news, there probably isn't anything you can do about it. Anything else
That is good news. Well, other than my cilantro just bolted the other day, so I've lost that for the year now.
Oh, sure.
Now that's it. Interesting. Someday we got to write a book about garden terminology. Now, when you say your cilantro bolted, that's interesting, bolting. I always joke that it bolted, got up and ran away. but bolting, of course, refers to it goes to seed, starts to flower and go to seed when you'd rather it doesn't, because some things like cilantro that you use the leaves for primarily, Now it
looks like I'm going to get myself some coriander.
That sounds good. Yeah.
All right, Jim. Thank you very much.
good luck.
Keep us posted. Email into the studio from Bob. He writes, I have a sugar maple that is about 10 years old, Don. This year's the first time the leaves are wilting. Almost looks like it got burned by chemical. I am sure that that's not it. At closer inspection, it appears it may have bugs eating on the leaves. Is there something I can treat the tree with?
It's an interesting question. Sometimes it takes such detective work to find out on some of these, especially established trees, when they start to look not so good. The first thing a person does, of course, is always look at the trunk to make sure that there wasn't some winter damage, trunk damage, cracking, barking that's kind of sloughing off, things like that. Because sometimes the winter bark damage can show up in the middle of summer. Then when the tree just can't pump things up into the leaves and they start to wilt. So you can always look for trunk damage, especially on maples that have kind of a thin bark situation. Or, like you mentioned, the insects. But insects usually won't cause wilting. They'll chew on the leaves. Now, you could certainly spray. Use one of the sprays, one of the all-purpose sprays, such as 7 insecticide. If you actually see the insects, you can treat. It's always best to identify what the insect is and then try to treat accordingly. But I would strongly look for any bark damage on the main trunk or up into the branches, because it could be responding to some previous damage by wilting.
Don Kinsler's with us until the bottom of the hour, 293-9000, or you can text or email in to talk@wday.com. We have a call coming in, Don, so real quick.
I might also real quickly mention, if anybody wants to send photos to me at forumgrowingtogether@hotmail.com. Sometimes a photo on a situation like that maple will help identify the problem better, too.
I sent you my photos of the mushrooms in my yard, so yes. That was very helpful for you to be able to see that. Steve is on the line. Steve, you're on with Don Kinsler.
Hi, Don. I was calling to ask you the question. I had Soil and Conservation plant a bunch of trees and shrubs on a 20-acre site of mine, and last week a farmer was spraying the field just to the north of me, and everything was good and healthy and fine, and now that was last Thursday he sprayed, and on Sunday I came out and checked my tree line again, and nearly every one of the shrubs on the north end where he had sprayed are just like it started on fire. I mean, like they had burnt up to nothing. Other than the very base of them, there's still a few leaves left on them.
What types are they? Are they mostly shrub type and also some tree type shelter belt?
I can't remember what.
Oh,
let's see. Did we lose them?
Sounds like we lost them.
Okay,
well,
a couple of things. Yes, and of course, I think you've probably certainly figured out what the problem is. As to what to do about it, one thing is if there's a way to water them, try to pamper them, to try to help them heal themselves. Sometimes that's possible. Sometimes things will recover from spray damage. So try to water them if you can. That would be great. Shrub-type things will sometimes recover from that. If the foliage is burnt off, depending on the severity and how much spray they absorbed, sometimes shrubs can come back out of that. Sometimes they can't. Sometimes it'll be taken internally so much. And so really the only thing you can do is water thoroughly.
He also wanted to know, he had mentioned before I got him on the air, if there was some place he could have them tested to see if it was the chemical that caused their demise.
Yes, they can do tissue samples of the things. So the thing to do would be to contact the county extension agent, and they should be able to line you up with where to take those, because they can certainly do tissue samples of that to see if the chemical has been taken internally into the shrub and tree.
Wow, that was fast.
The time goes too quick.
Sure
it
does.
It does indeed. Can you give us a 10-second answer to dealing with the bugs on raspberries and strawberries?
Yes, the little black beetles, which are called the picnic beetle or sap beetle, are showing up on raspberries and strawberries. And look for the insecticide called spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, spinosad.
And your website for questions, please?
Forum Growing Together, info@hotmail.com.
Excellent. And Growing Together will be in the forum this weekend.
Yes, some tips on how to deal with some of the dry weather that we're having.
Excellent. Thank you, Don. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, thanks. Have a good weekend,
everyone. And Lawn and Garden Radio brought to you by Lawn Care Guys, Johnson Lawn Service, M. Lakerman Construction, Windows Plus, Remax Legacy Realty, Huber Enterprises, JT Lawn Services and Landscaping, Baker Garden and Gift, Green Space Companies, Inc., and Carmen's Gardens. ...970 WDAY, severe storms passed through the Red River Valley. Hillsborough, of course, hit pretty hard. Residents there were asked to limit water usage because lift stations were down. A Tuesday storm brought damage to Mayville as it headed southeast. It missed us here and instead hit the lakes region with more than 80-mile-per-hour winds and one-inch hail. And social media has been full of photos and reports. And it looks like the power is back on around Lake Melissa. I believe that is the case. But let's find out. Let's go to Kevin Wallivan. He is on the road today. He is reporting from Detroit Lakes, and that is where he is. And, boy, I've seen many, many reports on social media this morning. Kevin, good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, good morning, Sandy.
So what have you seen? Have you arrived in DL?
Yeah, we've been here for a couple hours, and we're actually just off the Richwood Road. And, man, there's so much devastation here. There are just hundreds and hundreds of trees down. And, you know, some on the rooftops of cabins and homes, and some blocking roads. There's power lines that are down. So, yeah, they have their work cut out. But I don't know if you can hear in the background, but
yeah,
there's a chorus of chainsaws going on.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the tree removal or chainsaw business or electrical business, you're probably in good shape today.
Is there one part of Detroit Lakes that was hit harder than others? I see where there was a power out around Lake Melissa. I've seen damage from Big Floyd Lake, for example.
Yeah. Melissa got really hammered, and lots of trees down there and damage. And we're on Little Floyd outside of Detroit Lakes. And Little Floyd, as well as Big Floyd, got sustained a lot of damage. And the people that we talked to who were here and in their cabins said it hit at about 10 to 10 last night, and kind of pellet size hail and followed by this really strong wind. And, you know, it took down some healthy trees. So that wind was booking pretty good. And, you know, on top of that, I think the folks here in Little Floyd might be out of power for a while because there's just a lot of trees that are down on power lines, electrical lines.
I saw this morning a post about Hotel Shoreham where there was some 60 trees down around there.
Yes, and that's where we're headed next. After we leave the Little Floyd area, we're headed down there. I understand over 100 trees down on the golf course, which is kind of in that same neck of the woods.
Kevin Wallivan is our guest. He is a WDAY 6 news reporter, and he's your report, I imagine, will be tonight. What time will we see some of that video?
You bet. We'll have video, I believe, on the 5 o'clock, full story at 6. We'll be sending back video throughout the afternoon. So there should be stuff up on our social media and our website.
Excellent. Also, I'm wondering, has there been or have you seen structural damage to lake cabins, for example?
Yeah, there are a few that actually have trees on them. I understand up by Big Floyd, there is one with like a tree limb through a roof, and that's where we're headed next. But yeah, garages and some cabin rooftops sustained damage just because the sheer number of trees down. And, you know, this is lakes country, and there are a lot of trees around the cabin itself. So, it was bound to happen in that kind of wind.
I would imagine that there's a fair amount of damage to automobiles as well, with a report in the forum this morning about 1-inch hail in that part of the world.
Yeah, the hail right here where we're at in DL didn't seem to be that significant a problem as it was, I know, in some other towns. They said it was about just pellet to mothball size hail. So, and it was pretty brief. So I think that spared any broken windows or any damage to cars right here in the, mm-hmm. the DL area, maybe south of DL. I'm not sure. Yeah.
One thing I read too this morning is that the power company is working on replacing lines and transformers as well, Kevin.
That's right. Yeah, there are, like I said, the trees are actually laying on the power lines here on Jeez. Little Floyd.
Wow.
And I understand up on Big Floyd, there are transformer poles down. So, yeah, they the power companies, they'll have a weekend ahead of them, I think, to for the next 4 or 5 days anyway, trying to get everyone back on and get the lines back up. And if there's broken poles, I know there's some poles that are broken. So,
have you heard of any injuries at all, Kevin?
No, fortunately. And, you know, a lot of people keep talking about that. With so many trees going down, it is fortunate that no one, you know, has been injured, that these trees actually didn't go through a home or something like that. Huh. So, yeah, people said, you know, it's a mess, but it's good no one is injured.
Exactly. I imagine this cleanup is going to take a while.
Oh, wow, days. Yeah. And, you know, if you're not a full-time resident here at the lake, you'll come home for the weekend here, and
yeah.
you'll surprise. Have your work cut out for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll let you get back to work. And thank you so much for your time this morning. Again, we can see some of those reports on your social media sites, WDAY 6 News. And again, your reports tonight at 5, 6, and 10 on WDAY 6 News. Excellent.
Definitely. Yeah,
very good.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin Wallivan in the Lakes area. If you had any damage you want to share with us, please do. 293-9000, 888-970-9329, or talk at WDAY.com. I would imagine that there was some crop damage, I would guess, around the
sure.
Hillsborough area, crops that were just decimated
yeah.
by this weather that went through last night.
And it's tough for farmers because they've kind of crossed that point of no return where if the crop damage is severe now, there's nothing they can do.
Right, exactly. If you want to call in any storm damage, you're welcome to do that here on Midday Live with Sandy Butweiler, Mike Kappel on 970 WDAY. Wednesday. So it looks like Mike Kappel, the NRA, has released a statement involving about the Philando Castile death.
Just a year and a half late or something like that?
Well,
about a year
nearly
late.
Nearly a year, yes. And the NRA released a statement saying, "The reports from Minnesota are troubling and must be thoroughly investigated." Philando Castile, by the way, was shot by a police officer when he was pulled over, told the officer he had a concealed weapons permit. He was carrying a weapon, and the officer thought he was going for his gun, and he shot and killed the Philando Castile. And many were asking, where is the NRA? This was a legal gun owner. Where are they, and why haven't they made a statement about it? So their statement goes on. "It is important for the NRA not to comment while the investigation is ongoing. Rest assured, the NRA will have more to say once all the facts are known." That was a statement that was posted on the NRA's Facebook page. And the statement came 2 days after the Castile shooting. Now, they released a statement concerning the Dallas officers hours after the Thursday shootings, paying respects to the heroic Dallas law enforcement officers. But many NRA members took to social media to express their displeasure. They're not happy with the NRA and how they've responded to it. This is what one NRA member wrote. "Philando Castile had a valid concealed weapons permit, but was shot and killed. As an NRA member, I urge you to take a strong position in favor of this man. The NRA should be heavily recruiting and offering CWP safety to all Americans, perhaps extra effort in recruitment of minorities." And another post read this way, "I cannot believe the NRA has not come out in support for Philando Castile. I am a lifetime NRA member, but am disgusted at the lack of support you are showing these two. Philandro had no criminal record and held a CHL, which should speak volumes for his character. People around the country also pointed out the NRA's lack of comment on Twitter. And so it looks like the NRA members are not thrilled with how the NRA has handled the Philandro Castile death in Minnesota.
I was laughing because of the part where all of a sudden, and this, I can't get over this, is how the NRA now is saying, well, you know, this investigation is ongoing, so we don't want to have too much to say. This organization has a lot to say within moments of gun issues coming up in a variety of different ways, almost constantly. Yet in this case, this is hilarious to me. They're now exercising extreme caution before they comment on the case. I don't know how you can find anything but humor in that. And not that this is a certainly humorous situation. It's a terrible tragedy, but their response and their constant action and what they say and how they go about saying it, and more importantly, how quickly they go about saying it, that is hilarious to me. It's just clear that this is a situation where it isn't the typical NRA owner of a gun, and you know, they are looking at it through the lens of many other shootings that have been out there, which are different situations, certainly, where there's, you know, criminal activity or questionable activity. But in this case, you know, yes, did whether were there movements and things that happened and led to the shooting, it's a tragedy all around. But this man was a legal gun owner. You can't deny that part of the story. That is a fact.
An NRA spokesperson did not respond to requests for comment. As of Monday evening, the group had not mentioned the case on its main Twitter or Facebook page. And so, of course, there's the, let me get his name here. He is with the Black Caucus, and he said basically that this was a black man, and that evidently that these laws don't apply to black men. Mm-hmm. Jim. Hello, Jim. Thanks for calling Midday Live.
Yeah, hi. I kind of caught part of your thing. Are you talking about the Castile case?
Yes.
Yeah. That is one thing. I'm like, you know, why didn't the NRA step up and say something? You know, the guy had a licensed concealed weapons permit, and, you know, and yeah, he got, unfortunately, what happened to him, but the NRA didn't step up and say anything about, hey, this guy had constitutional rights, and he was a legal gun owner. It was just quiet from that. I think that spoke volumes to me.
Well, and it did to many NRA members as well, Jim. And it really does sort of fall into that category. And, you know, you can say all you want about Governor Dayton, but he said this early on. He said that if Philandro Castile had been white, he would still be alive.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I think there's a lot of shootings that go on in this country. There's a lot of white people who get killed also. But you just never hear about it because it's just not the real important thing in this country anymore. It's all about Black Lives Matter. And I'm not trying to diss that, but I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of shootings of white people in this country if you research it by law enforcement. And, you know, sometimes it's justified, sometimes it might be iffy.
All right, Jim, thank you. Appreciate your call here at 970 WDAY. Editorial from the Congressional Black Caucus, and the his name is Cedric Richmond. He is the chairman, and he told the Associated Press that for African Americans, the Castile verdict suggested that the Second Amendment does not apply to them. And in an editorial entitled Gun Rights for Whites Only, the board of the Baltimore Sun wrote, the NRA doesn't advocate for the Second Amendment. It advocates for the Second Amendment on behalf of those who have the correct skin color and political leanings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that the NRA is finally weighing in on this, and I think that's good. I hope they do look into it, and I hope they do find that they can come out and at least acknowledge that this was a legal gun owner and this was a tragic situation. And look, I do think there were mistakes on both sides. You know, clearly nobody thinks this man should have lost his life over what happened, but yeah, the bigger issue here, Sandy, to me, is that, and we, you know, this dog case is another one, and I think there is police video, the one we were talking about a few days ago, is that if I'm an officer in this day and age, I definitely want a body cam on me. No question about it. Because we couldn't see in that vehicle what was going on. And I think that if there was a body cam on this officer and you could see where this man's hands were going and we could sort out what really ended up happening here and what that officer saw. And I think if that video existed, I think a lot of people might have a different opinion about what happened going by the audio and some of the things the officer was saying at the time. So I think those are important things that police officers should have, because there's just getting to be too much of this kind of stuff going on, that it's a he said, she said, and there might be some video that still has some ambiguity about it, or audio. And it's we're at the point with the technology that we have is so good that if I'm a police officer, I would want it for my own protection, because I'm out there dealing with very dangerous, hard situations. And that's the next step, Sandy, is that there's an attitude about, you know, how do police officers go about it? I mean, we see so many videos of police officers being just berated by people for ridiculous reasons, and they remain very calm. I can tell you this, I'd last as a police officer for about a day on the beat, because if somebody started mouthing off to me like they do to these police officers on a regular basis, I'd have the baton out. You know, I wouldn't be shooting anybody, but I definitely would have the stick out, and it wouldn't be good. So
we're going to go to ABC News next here on 970. We see a call coming in. Tom, we don't have enough time right now to give you the right amount of time for your comment, so we'll continue this after the new news on Midday Live. WDAY time is 12:12. We left you the last hour talking about a statement from the NRA on the shooting of Philando Castile. Last month, Officer Geronimo Yanez was acquitted. He was charged with second-degree manslaughter after shooting Castile. And the statement actually comes from a spokesperson for the NRA who was doing an interview on CNN, and she said during this interview, "I think it's absolutely awful. It's a terrible tragedy that could have been avoided." She goes on to say, and this is really the most that we've gotten from the NRA, and just make note that she is speaking on behalf of the National Rifle Association. And even though she was doing this interview, she's also, by the way, a conservative TV and radio host. And she explicitly said that she was speaking for the NRA, and it seems to be the organization's first official statement on the case since the day after the shooting. So this is what she had to say on that CNN interview, explicitly said she was speaking for the NRA. She said, "I don't agree with every single decision that comes out from courtrooms of America. There are a lot of variables in this particular case, and there were a lot of things that I wish would have been done differently. Do I believe that Philando Castile deserved to lose his life over this traffic stop? I absolutely do not. I also think that this is why we have things like the NRA Carry Guard, not only to reach out to the citizens to go over what to do during stops like this, but also to work with law enforcement so that they understand what citizens are experiencing when they go through stops like this." Email into the studio. Thank you, Dave, for bringing it to my attention. I said that Philando said he had a concealed weapons permit. He did not say that. Mm. He said that he had a gun.
He did mention he had the gun.
Yes, though. He did say that he was carrying a weapon. He wanted to tell him that indeed he was carrying a weapon. And so he says, so thank you for that email into the studio. Joe writes in, "Sandy, while police make mistakes and some are even murderers just like regular citizens, using a few examples for an agenda is as bad as the actions the groups are accusing the officer and public at large of doing and thinking. A few facts that people don't pay attention to. Of all people killed by police, 56% are white, 26% are black. In New York City in the 1970s, police shot and killed over 200 plus people a year. Now, they shoot and kill a couple dozen a year. Poverty is also blamed as a result of racism against black people in our country. Yet looking at married black couples, their property rates are only slightly more than white couples' property rates or poverty rates. If that was due to racism, then it would obviously show up in the marriage statistics as well, and it doesn't. The point is that these issues are complicated with many, many influences, and these groups, using a few examples to suggest there is a widespread systematic problem, are creating problems beyond just shining a light on real issues. Caller? Mike? Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon, Sandy. I think just kind of, I guess, the way I'm seeing this with the NRA is I think them withholding a statement or not releasing something, I mean, you know, I think they were waiting for the facts to come out because we don't know. None of us know exactly what happened in that car. And having you know, I am an NRA member, and but, you know, I know what's concealed. The very first thing you are to tell an officer when you are stopped, if you've got a concealed weapon, you have to let them know. I mean, that is a law that says I have got a concealed weapon.
Well, he told him.
Yeah, but he did tell him that, Mike. But in Minnesota,
you know, he had a gun.
Okay, Mike.
Now that's a big difference.
Splitting hairs, Mike.
My brother is a law enforcement officer, and he said the way the stop goes, and he goes, and I will be honest, this was a black man that he stopped for speeding. My brother walks up there as a cop, and the very first words out of that guy's mouth were, "I have got a concealed weapon." And my brother, all he said was, "Thank you for notifying me. Just please keep your hands where I can see them." And the guy did that. And, you know, my brother went through the spiel about, you know, the reason I stopped you and everything else. And you know, my brother never asked to see the weapon or nothing. The guy did give him his concealed card and his license and registration. And my brother said, "I wrote him a warning and sent him on his way." He goes, "That's how the stop should go. But when the officer has to constantly tell you to not reach, do not reach, do not reach, that makes me sound like you're not the victim in this." And I think the NRA, had they released something saying that, you know, he was a legal gun owner, they basically would have been basically saying that, you know, disobeying the law enforcement orders is okay. And I don't think that's their point of it all.
Mike. Okay, yeah. I hear what you're saying, but there's a couple of things that should also be considered. And again, in a situation like this, we do have to assume that the officer is the more highly trained of the two people, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, so I think everybody would agree on that. So he's already told the officer that he has a gun, whether he said he had a concealed weapon or a gun. I mean, I think we're kind of splitting hairs there. He alerted the officer that he had a weapon. And also inside the vehicle is his wife and a child. And I understand that there are people out there and it doesn't matter that those folks are in the car that could be dangerous. But given that situation, plus the other officer on the other side of the vehicle looks very relaxed during the whole interaction. It just, you can see where in the end, because the officer should be the more highly trained individual in the situation, that the conclusion should be that there was some guilt on the part. Mike, we'll have to let you go. We'll have to cut him off.
Sorry,
Mike. We can't continue the conversation. Maybe if you get somewhere quiet, you can call back. But when you look at all of that stuff, it's just, it's hard to look. I back police as much as anybody. In fact, I'd like to see a little more, not shooting and killing, but I think a little more police brutality might be a good thing for society in a lot of cases. Okay, but in this case, he's the more trained of the two. He was alerted. Why would he tell him he had a weapon if he planned on shooting him, on top of the fact that he had his family in the car? It just, I understand why an officer would get a little twitchy when he's reaching and he's told not to, but I think you just have to exercise a little more restraint than firing 7 bullets into the vehicle. And again, that's not being anti-police. That's just this particular situation. It seems the officer, with the training he should have, overreacted in that case. To me, what I see reading court transcripts and hearing from people that were in there.
1220. Your comments are welcome at 293-9000, 888-970-9329, or talk at WDAY.com. And just going back to what Mike said, what don't we know about what happened? He said, there's a lot of things that we don't know. We don't know exactly what happened. All right, Tom is up next on the line. So stay there, Tom. We'll get right to you after this break on Midday Live.
You'll never find. It'll take the end of all time.
WDAY 1224. Thank you for joining us on Midday Live. Email into the studio. The seven bullets thing is what really blows my mind. Let's say that the police officer did fear for his life. After the second or third shot, he was still fearing for his life. Give me a break. I totally disagree with the idea that it's a racist type of thing, though I think police have just been way overly aggressive the last 15 years. So thank you for that email into the studio. We're going back to the Philando Castile case, and an NRA spokesperson has basically commented and spoken for the NRA on an interview on CNN, and that's our what our discussion is about today. And Tom has a comment. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling 970. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I guess, now, I don't know if you guys said it, if I heard it right, but he did have a concealed weapons permit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
He did have a license, and I guess he was supposed to be reaching for it, or at least an ID. He didn't have a gun in his pocket. His gun, I believe, was in the golf compartment, I believe.
Well, I've never really understood. I've heard so many different reports about where the gun was, because some say that it was in his front pocket.
Yes.
And there are those who say that it was tucked really deeply into his back pocket. Those who took care of him on the scene or in the ambulance.
But it was
ambulance.
On his person. It was on him.
Yes, it was on his person. But he had given him his insurance. And then I believe he was going for his wallet and his license. And the officer said, don't go for it, don't go for it. And Philando said several times, I'm not going for it.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, I've seen the video. I guess the original reason for the stop, or why they were following him or whatever, was because the car resembled a recent bank robbery. Now, I don't know if that's true.
Can
they corroborate that story?
No, it wasn't the car. It was actually that apparently the officer, and this is on tape, the officer Jimenez said to another officer that he looked like a robbery suspect because of his widespread nose. But then when Officer Jimenez, but then when he went up to the car, he told Philando Castile the reason for him being pulled over was because his brake lights were out.
Hmm. Well, that's two different stories right there already.
Right.
It's like,
Yeah,
sounds
and I don't,
like he's
you know,
confused to begin with.
And I think we all understand, look, if there's something suspicious that's gone on, or you think somebody might be a suspect, and there's a broken taillight, and that's a reason to pull somebody over. I think I understand that. And what's tough about this is, you know, I can see both sides of it. I can see where if you're an officer and somebody's told you they have a gun and they're reaching, I can see where you'd be concerned. But again, my thought is, because of the training you have, you know, you should be able to assess the entire situation. And with the fiance or the girlfriend and the child and the other officers, you know what I mean? It just seems there was overreaction. I don't think this officer is a bad police officer. I don't think he set out to kill anybody, but he made a terrible mistake, and he should have to pay for it.
Well, and he's
there was a cop on the other side of the car too.
Yeah, yeah, and he was just standing there, right? He didn't seem concerned at all.
Incredible.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. 293-9000, 888-970-9329. And okay.
We've got a traffic note that just got called in. There's a huge power outage out in the South Fargo area right now, causing some major traffic concerns in the area of the 32nd Avenue construction zone. It's affecting power lights and things like that. So if you're in that area, avoid it, get out of it, and try to find an alternative route.
Yeah, we'll take a look at it here on the traffic map and see what's going on. Yeah, there's definitely it's actually a spot, too, that I'm seeing here on I-94 and 45th Street in the It looks like the westbound lane. Looks like there's a backup as you approach 45th Street. So if you're traveling towards West Fargo, you're going to run into that. And, that 32nd Avenue zone all the way from 32nd Avenue over to 42nd Street. And 42nd Street backed up all the way to 36th Avenue. And the roads are on the Flying J, so it's a real mess there. And you're going to run into that other spot. It looks like something's gone on I-94 as well. So a couple of spots here over the noon hour, Sandy, to watch out for.
And if you've been traveling in that part of town, you also know that westbound traffic on 32nd Avenue South has been reduced to one lane at the intersection of 15th Street South. And those southbound turns will be restricted as well. And the closure is required to repair a failing storm sewer pipe. And it looks like all of those lanes are expected to be open by the end of today.
Yeah, lots of traffic issues out there right now. 32nd Avenue, Sandy, really, as I'm looking here from 42nd Street all the way over to University Drive in some form or fashion, just about everywhere, has very heavy traffic. So if you can avoid 32nd Avenue, at least right now especially, probably a good idea. And again, that 94 spot between really right around 45th Street, it appears, like I said, on this map that I'm looking at, it appears as you're headed west towards West Fargo, there seems to be an issue, particularly right at 45th Street. I don't know if there's been an accident there. We're just seeing heavy traffic because it is the noon hour.
Coming up, we have news. We have farm news for you. And then we're going to go downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Do it downtown. Today's edition coming up after your local news break on Midday Live.
Your life, don't cross them lines.
Downtown, let's go downtown. Downtown at night. Downtown, let's go
downtown. I love downtown Fargo. And in the next few days, it is going to be a hopping place. We call this segment on Midday Live with Mike Kappel, Sandy Buttweiler. Do it downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And in our WDAY studios, let's welcome back Josie Danz. She's the manager at Zambro's, one of our favorite stores in downtown Fargo and in all of Fargo. Josie, good afternoon.
Hello.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to be here.
Quickly, who does those beautiful window displays at Zambro's?
Mm-hmm. That would be Renee, my mom.
Well, yeah. She's a talented woman.
They're awesome.
Very nice. And also in our 970.
Who let this guy in?
Well, I don't know.
Was it you?
Ouch. Yeah. Don't ask me. But it is our good friend Tim Flackel. He is with the Downtown Safety Committee, and he is chair of the Downtown Community Partnership. Hello to you.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. To see you as well.
I'm not
well.
Sure if I'm working, but I can't hear myself, but that's okay.
No, you're fine.
Oh,
yeah.
You're working.
You can hear me. I can help
yes.
you out.
Tell us a bit, if you would, Tim, about this new safety committee. What is it all about?
Well, it's really part of a 1-2 approach that we've had to downtown safety from the Downtown Community Partnership Board standpoint. About a year ago, we put into place, through the Business Improvement District, what's called Block by Block. We brought them in. And they do a variety of kind of that frontline type activity. If somebody's not, if they need to engage with somebody and say, hey, kind of don't do that or move it along, or that's not the expectation that we have in this community. So they're able to do that, and they work in concert with law enforcement. So if they see something, then they can be the ones that are really the eyes and ears out on the streets. And then recently we've put into place a Downtown Community Partnership Safety Committee. And that will be chaired by Becky Whalen, who some of you know from a variety of things that she's been involved in, including Bell Bank. It will include a lot of people across the up and down and along Broadway. And maybe what I'll do is, if it's okay, I'll mention their names. And then
yeah,
that way
sure.
you know who
Please do.
People know who to contact. So like Randy Thorson, who some would know from the old Broadway. And, he and Warren, they own a number of businesses around. Chris Schlepp, who is from our Business Improvement District, is also on there because of that liaison role. Jonathan Holth, who is with the DCP, but also one of the owners of the Toasted Frog on Broadway. Kevin Riley, who is a downtown resident, but also on the board. Josie is on our committee, both as a board member, but also a business person who really kind of, see what's going on in that area. And then Arlette Preston, who is well known in our community, who lives on along Broadway,
right.
Is also on that, including some City of Fargo folks, Chris Hemlick from the Fargo PD, Cody Schuler, the executive director of the FM Homeless Coalition, and he's also a downtown resident, and Chase Grinberg, an NDSU student. So what we try to do is get somebody really from most of the blocks up and down Broadway, and then they can represent that block, and because they're right there, they can see what's happening both on their block and then a little to the east and a little to the west. So that's why we put them in, and it's, you know, a variety of issues, and I can go into those if you want, but...
Well, it's important, certainly, too, I just think, because, you know, as people go downtown, people aren't there every day. These folks that are there day in and day out can more quickly recognize when something's out of place or not right.
Right. I mean, it could be everything from, hey, the street light went out by those. So now we really have a dark intersection here. Mm-hmm. People are having trouble with. There's also, right, I recently called in, there's a place where the light or the trees have overgrown into the signal lights. Well, that's a safety issue. But really, it could also be overly aggressive panhandling that we have to always monitor to make sure that people know the expectations. Panhandling is not against the law, but there are limitations in terms of how aggressive they can be mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. They can't be being snarky and following people up and down. And, you know, if someone's overconsumed and maybe they come down to Broadway and they've already overconsumed. So it's not necessarily an indictment on anyone up or down who has a restaurant or bar. It's just how do we best manage those situations? So it could be lighting. It could be, can we bundle together as businesses and look at some kind of a, you know, cameras that they can have so they can monitor those things and, you know, with a shared purchase program. So it's just, we want to set up a vehicle wherein people can express their concerns and then they can say, what can be done? Are there things that need to be changed in order for something to be done? Do they need to tweak something with the city of Fargo? How do we manage that? So that's really a big overarching challenge for them.
Is the fatal fight that occurred a few months back, has that prompted this committee to form as well?
Well, I think there's a whole host of things that went into this, and certainly we don't want that to ever happen, and it's unfortunate all the way around in that situation, but this has been in the works for some time now. And this is, think about people I've identified. Because when we look at what are things that people kind of raise a flag and sometimes express concerns about, I don't think there are any, you know, secrets here. Sometimes they are concerned about parking, which we have a lot of parking in a variety of spaces, including the new Roberts Garage, but also safety. They want to make sure that they can take and go downtown and not have to worry about anything. And downtown is such a isolated location. When I hear something's happened in North Fargo where I live, I don't really worry because North Fargo is such a big place, and I go, well, that's, but downtown is so isolated that sometimes the news reports, it's mm-hmm. easy to identify that location as a specific mm-hmm. location. So sometimes the news reports aren't helpful in that regard. So, but it has been in the works for a while. When I came on as chair of the board, looking at ways we can continue to improve the downtown, because we need to be able to make sure that when people are down there with their parents or, you know, bring a date downtown, that they have a great experience each and every time.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, good man. That's good. Thank you, Tim. It is the number one priority in downtown Fargo. And now we're looking at this week where, beginning tomorrow, thousands of people are going to be attending the street fair, Josie.
Yes, it's already starting. They're setting up today, so there's a lot to look forward to. The street fair. Thursday through Saturday.
Excellent. And so it is going to be a great time down there this weekend. And it looks like it's going to be pretty nice for the weekend as well. And I do want to send people over to one of my favorite stores in downtown Fargo, and that is O'Day Cache. Cindy O'Day, I'll tell you, she really does most of the buying for her stores. She travels around the world. And she has received a shipment of these beautiful hand-woven baskets from Morocco that are made by Berber men. They're very cool. They're great for carrying stuff in that you bought at the street fair. O'Day Cache is right across the street from the Fargo Theater. And give yourself a little bit of time when you go to O'Day Cache, because you're going to need it to take a look at all of the wonderful, beautiful things that you'll find there. If you're looking for some gift ideas, you'll find them there as well. And also, if you're getting hot at the street fair and carrying too much stuff around, just pop into O'Day Cache. They invite you to come in and cool off and take a look at those baskets woven by Berber men to help you carry your stuff. I'm not sure what a Berber man is, but I can't wait to find out.
If
Cindy's got it, trust me, it's great. And so check out Eau de Cachet. And if you get a little warm, you can always stop in and cool off this weekend as well. Now, another great story we want to talk about, Josie, is Beyond Running.
Yes, Beyond Running, as most people know, is just north. It's on the north end of Broadway. And every year they have a great sidewalk sale during the sidewalk or during the street fair, and you can get some amazing deals. And they're also like the most fun people working there, and they're super intelligible about everything that they're selling. So if you need a good pair of walking shoes for the street fair,
excellent.
That's the place to go.
They're the only group of people I ever see, Sandy, that when they run, they actually do have a smile on their face, because almost everybody else I see is not smiling.
Exactly. And they drink beer pretty much after every run, so you can't really go
wrong.
You
have to carb load, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that the thing with running?
Yeah. We should start running.
We should get in, Sandy.
Yeah, we're in.
We're runners now.
The Plains Art Museum, and finally this summer, I know that finally, now we are going to enjoy free admission at the Plains Art Museum.
That's super exciting. Yeah, so free admission to all their art galleries at the Plains Art Museum, which is awesome, and that's all the time. But this Thursday and Friday, coinciding with the street fair, they have their third annual summer art sale, and it's taking place in the Catherine Kilborn Burgum Center for Creativity, which is attached to the museum. And they're going to have everything from ceramics, printmaking, jewelry, and it's all made by regional, both professional and emerging artists. So there's just a huge mix of really
excellent.
Cool art that will be available.
Now, if you want to cool off, you're invited to stop in the Fargo Theater as well. And they have a couple of films where there's some Oscar buzz about, right?
Yeah, actually, both they have two films right now. The Hero, which mentioned last week, but has local ties.
One.
And then also a movie called Beguiled, which is also getting a lot of really good buzz. And that's directed by Sofia Coppola and stars Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell. So
indeed. I've been wanting to see that movie for some time. And it's a good time now to head down to the Fargo Theater and check out those two pretty incredible movies. And The Hero, by the way, is also produced by local people.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
That's very cool. All right. Now, let's talk about patio weather. It is so fun to hang out on the patio in downtown Fargo.
Yes. And this weekend, it sounds like it's going to be perfect patio weather. It's going to be hot. And the other nice thing about street fair is you can do people watching from all the patios.
That's fun.
It is. Yeah. So if you get your fill of the street fair and you just want to hang out, there are so many places downtown to grab a beer, grab a drink, and it's just going to be a perfect weekend, I think.
Yep.
You know, I could list probably 12 different places that I'd like to go and sit and have a beer right now.
Exactly. Yes. Great restaurants downtown.
Yeah.
And great people watching, as you said. And it's nice to sit down, take a break from the street fair, and maybe enjoy a nice lunch and a cold one, too.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about Drecker for a moment, because... Yeah. The Tell, which is so fun. I've been lucky to be a judge for The Tell. It is tonight.
Yes.
And this is going to be held at Drecker, right?
Right. And for those people maybe not familiar with The Tell, basically it has a theme every time they have the event. And people are invited to tell a story that's like 3 to 5 minutes long going along with that theme. And then there's a set of judges who pick their favorite stories. And then there's a winner and a prize. But it's kind of like... Just, I don't know if people have heard Moth Radio Hour, but it's kind of Fargo's version of that.
It is. And the doors will open at 6
at
Drecker tonight. And it's kind of a first come, first serve, but you can reserve a table. And admission is $10 or $20 to reserve a table.
Yeah.
It's a blast. And if you've never been, it'd be a great idea to check it out tonight at Drecker.
Yeah.
And where's Drecker, again, for those who might not know?
It is on First Avenue.
First Avenue.
Yep.
Excellent. All right, now I want to also talk to you about what's going on at Zambro's.
Yeah, so also speaking of Drecker, a few months back, Zambro's started doing an event that we call Brews and Books.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's like our little book club that we host once a month. It's the third Monday every month. And we call it Brews and Books because we serve beer and Drecker beer. And then we also have coffee. And we just pick a different book every month and invite people to come. It's free. And, you know, we start talking about one book, but that leads into talking about different books. And It's just kind of, it ends up being like a book salon, basically.
It's like a beer book club?
Yeah.
Well, Sandy, we could stop in after our runs.
After our run. That's right, Mikey. Let's do that. What a fun time. And so when is that going on?
It's
going
to be July 24th.
July 24th.
Yes.
And it happens about once a month.
Once a month.
All right. Yep. And it's a, it just so I, just for my own my own selfish needs. Mm-hmm. So you drink beer while you talk about books?
Yeah.
Oh, baby.
Yep.
Now we're talking. Mm-hmm. Did your mother come up with that idea too?
No, that was me.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. Josie, wonderful idea. Mm-hmm. Now, Do It Downtown can be heard here on Midday Live on 970 WDAY with Josie Danz from Zambros. Today, we welcome Tim Flackel from Downtown Safety. And this program, by the way, is made possible by some very generous sponsors like Beyond Running, See Lizzie's, Drecker Brewing, Great Northern Bicycle, O'Day Cache, Plains Art Museum, Unglued, and of course, Zambros on Broadway in downtown Fargo. What a great weekend ahead in downtown Fargo. Don't forget about the Beer and Book Club. Can we rename that to the Beer Book Club, maybe?
I mean, you can call it whatever you want. Sandy.
Okay, super. Thank you,
the
Josie.
Buttweiler Book Club.
There the Buttweiler Book Club. Club. I like that.
Yeah. Do you have Green Belt? No.
We'll get some for you.
Okay. Josie Danz is the manager at Zambros, and Tim Flackel, chair of the Downtown Community Partnership and also the Committee for Downtown Safety. Thank you, Mr. Flackel.
Glad to come in.
It's always a pleasure to see you, my friend. And Josie, have a good weekend.
Yes.
Thank you very much. We'll see you next time on Do It Downtown.
Hold on to your baby when you slip into the sky.
Downtown. 970 WDAY. This is Midday Live. Thank you for joining us. That was fun.
That was fun. Do It Downtown, Sandy. Let's go for a
Do
run.
Do It Downtown.
Right after the show.
Yes,
I'm ready.
Okay, go ahead. You start first.
Well, we get a beer afterwards.
Well,
yeah, that's the
I
key.
Have my
that's
running
the prize.
Shoes on. So, hey, an interesting letter to the editor, and this sort of reflects what we've seen in across the nation after the 4th of July, where, remember, I think it was, it's called Siesta Key Beach. It was in Florida, and there were pictures that were all over the web after beachgoers celebrated the 4th of July and left all of their trash behind.
Mm.
And so, you know, there were volunteers cleaning up beer cans and fireworks and tents and chairs were all strewn along the beach. And a letter to the editor this morning that caught my attention was from Ernest West, who's from Richville, Minnesota. He's talking about the boat parade on Otter Tail or in Otter Tail County, on a lake in Otter Tail County. And he talks about how things have really changed and used to be, you know, more like a sort of, you know, it was just a boat parade where people went by, decorated their boats, and it's kind of turned into a mess there, too, with people behaving badly, actually. And he says maybe it's time to forego the boat parade because, you know, and the problem here is that sometimes people who come up for the 4th of July, they're not from around Lakes Country.
Come from a little farther out, especially around the holiday.
Exactly. And so, you know, some of the boaters that trash the lakes, they have these boat-to-boat water balloon fights, sometimes involving boats that aren't even in the fight. Two kids were hit square in the face with balloons, almost knocked them overboard. Mm. So, you know, some pretty crazy behavior, actually, in our own backyard here in Lakes Country. So, you know, how do you get around this? How do you deal with this? And maybe the boat parades have to, you know, be a thing of the past if people can't behave.
Yeah, and it's hard, too, because I don't know that they're all community organized. I think some of them are sort of these private things. I know the lake that we go to, where my wife's family's been doing a celebration for many years, we're not a part of this boat parade, but there's one that comes by every year, and I don't know that it's an official parade. I think it's just a loosely organized thing by residents.
Okay, let's go warm up.
All right, let's do it.
News is next.